The following Dharma discourse was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmn.org. Thank you for listening.
This is from the Book of Serenity, case 18, Zhaozhou's dog. A pointer. A gourd floating on the water. Push it down and it turns. A jewel in the sunlight. It has no definite shape. It cannot be attained by mindfulness. Immeasurably great people are turned about in the stream of words. Is there anyone who can escape? A student once asked Master Zhaozhou, does a dog have Buddha nature or not? Zhaozhou said, no. The student said, all sentient beings have Buddha nature. Why does a dog have none? Zhaozhou said, because it still has impulsive consciousness. At another time, a student asked Master Zhaozhou, does a dog have Buddha nature or not? Zhaozhou said, yes. The student said, since it has, why is it then in this skin bag? And Zhaozhou said, because it knows, yet deliberately transgresses. Verse. A dog's Buddha nature exists, a dog's Buddha nature does not exist. A straight hook is basically six fish who turn away from life. Chasing the air, pursuing fragrance, cloud and water travelers, in noisy confusion they make excuses and explanations. Making an even presentation, he throws the shop wide open. Don't blame him for not being careful in the beginning. Pointing out the flaw, he takes away the jewel. The king of Qin didn't know Lian Zhangru. So you knew. Buddha nature is your nature, my nature is the nature of all things. In English, the definition of nature is a basic or inherent feature of something. In the context of Buddha nature, basic means all-pervading, throughout space and time, unconfined, no boundaries. Inherent means lacking in any individual, separate, independent existence, not arising by itself, not conditioned, not coming from somewhere, going to somewhere. When you push it down, it turns. Like a jewel, it has no definite shape. All of these ways in which it has been described, pointing to, as the Buddha said in the Lotus Sutra, parables, similes, analogies, all these different ways of using images and concepts to try and allow us to hold in our mind something that is ungraspable, something that can't actually be described by its very nature. It cannot be attained or known, but it can be realized when the self is free of attainment and knowing. And so what that means is that practice has to be very skillful. It has to be very skillful. Guiding us from the place where we begin, which is really embedded within our thinking mind, our concepts, all of our, the power of our knowing, naming, categorizing, all the ways in which we organize the world and keep it in some semblance of being manageable. But to not be tethered to that. To work within our senses in Zazen so that our Zazen doesn't become aloof or mute or indifferent or suppressive, but that we're not getting entangled in the senses. To not rely upon words and letters, not get caught in the stream of words, but not to reject them either. And so to really appreciate the profound nature of the middle way, and how it challenges us to be alive, basically. In Dogen's Fascicle on Buddha Nature, he recounts this, these two dialogues, these two mandos with Zhaozhou. And Dogen says, when the student asks Master Zhaozhou, does a dog have Buddha nature? Dogen says, we should clarify the meaning of this question. A dog is a dog. It's not that the student was asking whether a dog has Buddha nature. The student is asking whether an iron person still practices the way. To encounter Zhaozhou's poisonous hand may look unfortunate for this student, but it's like the lingering trace of seeing half a sage after 30 years. And that's something that can be difficult to appreciate about the koan. This koan is centering a dog, Buddha nature, but it's not about the dog. When Dogen says it's about an iron person, whether an iron person still practices the way, that iron person is an image that's used to refer to somebody who's free and unhindered. Who here, iron is not a fortress, but like a great rain that washes all of the scars of the burning and bring forth the miracle of spring. That's really what the student is asking. Why does Zhaozhou say no? All beings have Buddha nature. Why does a dog have none? And so to examine this no, mu means no. And Dogen is speaking directly from Buddha nature. He's speaking as Buddha nature. And here there's only this no. And that sense of no also means absence, empty. In the tradition of koan study, which can be taken up in different schools of Zen, but it particularly in the Linji school has generally a particular way of working with it, which is as a meditation practice, and which is as the object of one's meditation, and to use that inquiry to realize the Dharma that is being brought out in the koan. If Buddha nature is ineffable, if it has no characteristics, how do we turn towards it? Right? If we want to direct our attention towards it so we can examine it or realize it, but it doesn't exist. It doesn't have a form. So how do we study it? Our true self, our true nature. And so the koan presents us with an inquiry that takes us in through that gate. And so mu, the first koan in koan training traditionally, is a very important koan because the student really has no idea what they're doing, pretty much. They have been sitting, they've been developing their Zazen practice, they've been working with the breath, that's been evolving. They've to a point where they're ready to work with the koan, but when they take up the koan, the student really doesn't know what they're doing, and they need to practice with confidence. It's really a marvelous leap. That's why it's very difficult, if not maybe a little ill-advised for somebody to try and do that, this particular kind of practice on one's own. Because we'll just, we'll rely on what we already know. And the whole point of the koan is that it throws you into a wilderness where you don't know. And so part of the training is the student has to be comfortable enough in that to step forward. And to not get caught up in the stream of words. So their meditation has to be stable enough that they can sit with that question in their mind and not just spin. And he says, Dogen says, it may look to have encountered Zhaozhou's poisonous hand. Poisonous because the medicine that he's dispensing here is lethal to our attachment to the sense of self. In other words, it's trying to free us of that. And the character for Mu actually looks a little bit like prison bars. Wu Man talks about the gateless gate. There's a gate. I can't get through it. It will not open. It will not yield, but I must pass through. That sense of an impenetrable barrier, as it is often described. And so he says, it might look unfortunate for the student that now they are in this dilemma. But really, it's like the lingering trace of seeing half a sage after 30 years. You've been searching for 30 years. And even though you've just discovered half a sage, thank goodness. Dogen says, when you hear this word, Mu, a direction for study emerges. A road opens up. Now, of course, what's happening in koan training is the same as what's happening in shikantaza practice. Really, it's the same as what's happening in the breath practice, visualization practice. All the forms of Buddhist meditation have certain fundamentals in common, which is what makes them Buddhist forms of meditation. They just appear differently. And as time goes on, they're not really even that different as we understand more clearly. Yasutani Roshi said, spiritual doubt, which this koan definitely brings forward, arises from strong faith. It's a doubt as to why we and the world should appear so imperfect, so full of anxiety, strife, and suffering, when in fact our doubt tells us exactly the opposite is true. It is a doubt which leaves us without rest, which we cannot just put away. And that's part of the challenge for a lot of students, particularly perhaps in lay life, where there are so many concerns and involvements, engagements, things we need to attend to, that the urgency, the immediacy of bodhicitta can become obscured. So much of training is intended to help keep it very present within our minds. And so this doubt, Yatan Roshi is saying, is really based in faith, right? Because it's our doubt that is arising from the sense that there has to be another path. Dogen says, when you hear this word, this Mu, a direction for study emerges. The know that Buddha nature itself calls forth must be like this. The know that the dog itself calls forth must be like this. The know that witnesses call forth must be like this. This know holds the moment that dissolves a rock. We've been speaking about that rock over the last couple of days of this intensive, the rock of the kleshas, of the underlying dispositions, of the fetters, of our attachments, of our false views, of the habit energies, all of these ways of speaking about the various aspects of our mind and consciousness, and the world that flows forth, that in the midst of Buddha nature, being our fundamental nature, we struggle. And things seem so imperfect, and in a sense, we then make a world that is imperfect to match our view. Right? It's a way of looking at it. That we create a world that matches the view that we bring to it. And even though that causes us immeasurable pain and confusion, there's a sense of reasonableness to it. This no, this Mu, no, the dog does not have Buddha nature, is like a moment that dissolves a rock. And this no is not an idea of no. And again, that's part of the challenge of the koan. So the student is told to sit with Mu, but to not sit in the meaning of Mu. They're not trying to figure something out about what the meaning of Mu means. Because meaning is just more concepts. But the meaning of the word is why that word is being used. And so it seems like there's a kind of a conflict. Sometimes people say koans present paradoxes. They don't, really. That those dualities, those conflicts, are when we're standing back and thinking about it. Well, wait a minute, the word has meaning. It's being used specifically for that reason, but I'm not supposed to sit with the meaning. That seems like a conflict or a dilemma, because I'm standing back trying to figure it out. And that's the chasm that the student has to cross. It does not sit easily in the mind, this mu. And so the student of this no has to sit with their confidence in their Buddha nature, their Buddha mind, their capacity to realize himself, to see this koan, and not place any idea in front of them. And so if we think of aspiration, the importance of aspiration in our practice, and sort of clarify the difference between aspiration and expectation, that when we have an expectation, there's something that's wanted, which is common to aspiration. But the difference is that when we have an expectation, we already have a pretty good idea of what we're going to get, what it's going to look like. We can see it. We can taste it. That's part of what brings us forward. It's part of our motivation. It's right there. And aspiration isn't that. Aspiration needs to be a very strong desire, intention, aspiration, but without any idea being held in front of us. We can study what Buddhism teaches about what we're aspiring for, liberation, enlightenment, selflessness, so that we don't have a confused sense of what that means. But then having that understanding, essentially, it's here, it's inside of us. Right? We don't need to hold it here. We don't need to hold it here. We don't need to do that, actually. And there's a way in which the understanding that we're developing through study guides us internally when we're practicing without becoming a fixed idea. And that's where study and meditation so beautifully work together. Without our study of the Dharma, our meditation, what makes it Buddha Dharma? Right? What makes it meditation that is examining and is in accord with the Dharma? But without the meditation, the study just becomes intellectual. And so how they work together within is quite wonderful. And so the student is to bring themselves to this with their whole body and mind. Master Wu Min says, with your 360 bones and your 84,000 pores, make your whole body one great inquiry. Without any hindrance in your mind, no image, no idea, no expectation, no timeline. Which means when the student gets frustrated, has insecurity, has doubt, right? It's not whole body and mind. Woman goes on to say, don't attempt nihilistic or dualistic interpretations. Don't try any interpretations at all. Cast away your whole illusory discriminating knowledge and consciousness accumulated up till now. Why does a dog not have Buddha nature? The student says, all creatures have Buddha nature. Zhaozhou says, because it still has impulsive consciousness. That's what we've been looking at over the last couple days, impulsive consciousness. Another translation says, because it has delusion and attachment. So why does it? The basic understanding is all things have the Buddha nature. So why does Zhaozhou say no? Because he speaks the truth. So what is this no? And then when the student asks, Zhaozhou says, because it still has delusion and attainment. Remember, it's not about the dog. And so, to intimately observe, as Dogen said, the causes and conditions of this self that we are trying to liberate, or we are trying to more accurately, trying to realize is already free. And so all of this language that points to these knots, our attachments, our underlying inclinations, the kleshas, afflictive emotions, greed, anger, delusion, a virtual inventory, right, of all of the ways in which we show up in the world that bind us. As Dogen said, we are complex beings. He said we are complex beings, and so a multitude of forms of pride arise, or self-clinging. And so there needs to be a multitude of ways of letting go. And so that's why faith is essential. That's why doubt is essential. Without doubt, without the question, the sense that there is another way, then there's no sense of something beyond this imperfect world. Without faith, how could we ever have the confidence, the trust, the courage to leave home, the home of our habits? Right? It wouldn't make sense. And so within this ever-present no is the, in a sense, the self-clinging no of our hesitation, of our doubt, of our circling. We talked about that. Why does this dog have no Buddha nature? Because it still has impulsive consciousness. At another time, a student asked Xiaozhou the same question. And Xiaozhou here says, yes, dog has Buddha nature. And the student says, well, since it has, why is it then it's still in the skin bag? If it's free of the self, then why is it still in this skin bag? Right? Because as long as we're in this physical body, we will experience, right, all the things that come along with having a physical body. Sickness, old age, and death, pain, headaches, heartaches. Watching all the wonderful capacities of our youth begin to transform as we get older. So why is it still in the skin bag? And Xiaozhou says, because it knows, but deliberately transgresses. Another translation says, knowingly, it dares to be so. Same question. The question is the answer different or not? Does Buddha nature appear and disappear? Is it dependent upon sincerity? Is it dependent upon your practice? If it's dependent, then it can't be liberation. It's the same as dukkha. Dogen says this yes that Xiaozhou utters is not that of the commentators or anyone who would theorize. He said, go beyond and study the Buddha yes. Buddha yes is Xiaozhou yes. Xiaozhou yes is dog yes. Dog yes is Buddha nature yes. I was remembering this morning, a student, a Japanese monk from Japan came and studied with us for a while, trained here for a while. Young fellow, very eager. And Dadaroshi told me that when he first went in to see Dadaroshi in Doksan, Dadaroshi said, what is your practice? And the monk looked at him and said, yes. We might say that Xiaozhou's no is the road to yes. Buddha yes, Xiaozhou yes, dog yes, Buddha nature yes, you yourself yes, all sentient beings yes, this very moment yes, this imperfect world yes. This yes is the yes of no, not born, not destroyed, not stained, not pure, no loss, no gain. No form, no sensation, conception, discrimination, awareness, skandhas, No, Xiaozhou says. Therefore, yes. No eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, no color, sound, smell, taste, touch, phenomena, the senses, the realms of the senses. No realm of sight, no realm of consciousness, the consciousness of the senses. Avalokiteshvara say no, so we can have yes. No old age and death, no end to old age and death. No suffering, cause of suffering, extinguishing, no path, Four Noble Truths, all know. So there is an unbounded, ever-present yes. And thus the Bodhisattva lives Prajnaparamita. Living this no, which never denies, never avoids, never suppresses, forsakes nothing. So what is the no? What is the no that is not denying? What is the no that never creates any gate at all? What is the no that makes it clear that it's never possible to be outside? That's why this is a practice in which we have to go beyond the stream of words. Right? And as I have said, this is what I so appreciate about the Zen tradition, that understands the power of words and how words can be used to explain and give instruction and outline certain aspects of the path. And those are necessary, and also we really like those words because we can easily understand them and apply them. You do this with your body, you do this with your eyes, you do this with your mind. Right? But then as soon as you begin, you realize that instruction actually isn't answering every question. It's not actually giving you all the essential information. It hasn't fully prepared you. Correct. Sometimes when students, when they are given a new service position, they're given instruction, the same instruction that everybody else is given. And they get scared. They say, I don't have enough. You haven't given me enough information. I said, no, you have enough. It's enough. Now go. Learn what you have to learn. Discover what you have to discover. Those words can't take you there. And so the koan arises out of that deep understanding. There's actually even very little instruction about how to sit with the koan. My teacher basically said two words, be it. That was pretty much it. And he had about two or three different ways he said the same thing. And the rest, he entrusted me. He clearly trusted me, as he trusts all of us, to know the rest, to discover the rest, to rely upon our own resources and discover what we need to know, what we need to not know. So Zazen is practicing and meeting and realizing this no every time something arises, right? The habitual conditioned no is when we try and suppress it and deny it. That's the easy no. That's the no we've all done lots of. That doesn't help. In the same way that the yes of our grasping, running after, getting entangled, that doesn't help either. And so Zazen is to help us discover a more fundamental no and yes. And in training, it's like the no of renunciation when you don't get what you want, right? Right? Every time you come here, you don't get everything you want, right? And so you get some things you don't want. Virtually guaranteed, right? And so what do we do, right? When that small no, that small yes is not being satisfied, right? That's the gate, the no of letting go, of then going beyond letting go. So Buddhism has said over and over and over again that the idea that our freedom, our satisfaction comes from getting, accumulating, preserving, owning, possessing. And so it gives us the image, the model of the hungry ghost, right? That's how the hungry ghost started out. But it didn't stop. It never encountered, it never realized the limit of that habitual yes and no. It just kept going and going and going until its, as its belly got larger and its mouth got smaller, and the actual experience of success, successfully fulfilling the desire became more and more painful, less and less satisfying, until this pursuit of the desire itself became its own thing. And so in training, the guidelines, the precautions, the precepts, the simplicity, the silence, the stillness, to calm the mind, to awaken the mind, to encounter this impulse of consciousness, so that ultimately we can with daring, be so, knowingly be so. Since it has Buddha nature, why is it in this skin bag? In the Lotus Sutra, the Buddha spoke to that. He said, since he attained Buddhahood, an extremely long period of time had passed. And he divulges for the first time that his lifespan is immeasurably long. And that in fact, he never entered nirvana. He says, now, however, although in fact I have never actually died, I announce that I am going to adopt the course of extinction. I'm going to appear to pass away. Why? This is an expedient means which the Buddha uses to teach and raise great doubt and faith in living beings. Why do I do this? Because if the Buddha remained in the world for a very long time, then people would fail to plant good roots and become attached to the five desires and get caught in the net of deluded thoughts and imaginings. If they see that the Buddha is constantly in the world and never enters extinction, they'll grow arrogant and selfish or become discouraged and neglectful. They'll fail to realize how difficult it is to encounter the Buddha, to encounter the Buddha Dharma, and will not approach them with a respectful and reverent mind, will not approach the three treasures with urgency, with a sense, that sense of time swiftly passes by and opportunity is lost. We'll approach it instead with a sense of, I've got tomorrow, not today. Today's not good, but tomorrow. Tomorrow's good. That's one of the reasons why having a human life is considered fortunate, is we live long enough to experience the sort of encounter the bare teeth of life, right? The pain and confusion of it, but not so long that we could put it off forever. It needs to be impermanent. Dogen says, if you want to know the person of no death in your own house, then how could you leave this skin bag right now? Is he saying, how do you actually let it drop away? Lose that attachment? Or is he saying, how dare you leave this skin bag behind? It's not outside. Whoever the person of no death might be, Dogen says, when does that person not leave the skin bag? It never has belonged to us. And so all along, in studying Buddha nature, we've been studying how we are never apart from our true nature. Zhao Zhou, in his way, is trying to help these students realizing this. No, a dog has no Buddha nature. Yes, a dog has Buddha nature, speaking the truth each time. Because that truth of Buddha nature is not one or another, or two together, or neither two. Dogen says, know that this transgressing, this daring to be so, encompasses the practice of becoming free. When the practice of becoming free is fully encompassed, then it encompasses you and others at the same time. So I spoke about during the intensive about how the Dharma has, for 25 centuries, has always been trying to remind the students of this time, that time swiftly passes by, that this is a tremendous good fortune, gift that we have encountered a path. And to not take it lightly, to not take it for granted, to not wait till tomorrow. And to really appreciate that within that good fortune, you're a big part of that, right? Like you've had a hand in that. In other words, that each of us has lived in a way to this point to have both raised that doubt, had faith enough, and actually acted on that, either knowingly or unknowingly, and have encountered the Dharma, and to appreciate that, right? Throw a little party of appreciation, right? It's so easy for us to, you know, sort of put so much weight on all that holds us back, right? And to appreciate all the good without which none of this would be happening. And without which we wouldn't have been able to live our lives sufficiently such that here we are. And so that all of this, these penetrating and challenging teachings are not trying to make it more difficult. They're trying to actually make it easier. But because we are difficult in our mind, because we are complex and have become rather enamored of that, it's difficult to release. But that's all that our ancestors have wanted, because that was offered to them. And so to appreciate, here we are, and to not just have a party, but to live that, each in our own lives, in our own way, with our own capacities, and within the conditions of our life, which means it's going to be different in every person's life. Remember, there is a complex myriad paths of non-attachment. There's one Dharma and essentially one path, but there are various ways in which it has to appear. That's why it says in the poem, making an even presentation, Xiaozhou throws the shop wide open. It's all here for us. And so may we dedicate our lives to living truly.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.